Hello, everybody. My name is Asko Tolvanen, and I'm working as professor in Metallurgy Center for Human Sciences. I hope that I give you some piece of knowledge about analyzing and reporting structural equation modeling. My lecture talk: how to analyze some models and how to report research which uses structural equation modeling. The statistical possibilities analyze different research questions related to them increase all the time. The complexity increase, also the possibilities to answer research questions. Now I'm talking about basics of structural equation modeling and so some typical models. Here is the content, and 1 to 10, I talk about basics of them, and I ask, for example, why to use them. It's not clear what is the advantage to use structural equation modeling, but I show you some important feature. And then there is symbols when using structural equation modeling. The symbols are very informative because you maybe have a complex model and how to solve what you want to research. The model could have latent factors, many items, but those draw some latent factor, and looking the picture, you see what is the whole model. Then I show you some path models. I talk about simplex model, latent growth model, which are usually used in longitudinal analysis. Then I talk how to test confirmatory your factor structure. And then I talk a little bit missing values in data, only the concepts and how to work with missing values. And then I show you what are the steps building structural equation modeling. And then 11, 12, and 13 only show some models, some extension which uses structural equation modeling as a basic model. I leave one book. It's in Petteri now. There is a very nice book. It's a handbook of structural equation modeling edited by Rick Hoyle, and there are many writers that are very high level in methodology. And in his book, the first sentence I have copied is say that structural equation modeling is a growing family of statistical methods. There are many statistical features which are combined now in structural equation modeling. For example, logistic regression and factor analysis are combined now that you can do both in same time. But in many cases, you should remember that structural equation modeling is basically linear model. There is possibilities to make nonlinear models, but basically all the association are linear, we estimate. Now, why to use structural equation modeling? Even I talk that there are growing possibilities for statistical modeling when using them. That is now very important reason to use structural equation modeling. But historically, the first reason to use them is to estimate and isolate error variance in measurement. When you measure something, you cannot measure it a such way that it it has only true score. Even you measure muscles power, there is variation that is not related to power. It's a situation dependent, and we talk about measurement error. And in many area of science, we build scales. We, for example, ask questions and think that those questions describe some latent thing behind those questions. And we need to combine them and isolate the variance related to error. When we are able to do that, that we estimate and isolate error variance, we get an advantage that we get unbiased estimates. And this further avoid to get spurious associations. For example, when you're doing a multiple linear regression model, for example, using SPSS, you should think that independent variables only consist true scores. If they have measurement error, then it is possible that you get some regression coefficient which is spurious due to measurement error. And that we historically try to avoid. And the second reason is that when we have a lot of latent factors, for example, we are able to do path between factors and make a theoretically reasonable model. And nowadays, we can do very complex hypotheses, and we are able to answer those using structural equation modeling.
What's the path between variables? Is it the same thing as association, correlation?
Directed association.
Okay, yes.
All the time the programs develop. We have such programs as Lisrel. I don't know if you have familiar with it. We have Amos. We have MX. We have M+. There are many programs. Even Stata can now do structural equation modeling. And all the time they add features in all the program. And you should be aware when you ask some question, what is the best program? What is the best way to do your analysis? Okay. Structural equation model in this example has two latent factors. Here, task avoidance behavior is latent. We have measured it with, in this picture, with five items. They could be questions. For example, Likert scale. You have ask some questions, and then you try to estimate task avoidance behavior that combine those questions. And then there is other latent factor, math performance, which has measured using four items, and now I'm able to regress math performance on task avoidance behavior. And what advantage I get doing that kind of model? I get this regression coefficient just like using true scores. If I'm able to measure true scores for task avoidance behavior and math performance, then I could make regression analysis using, for example, SPSS. But because I'm not able to do that, I use latent factors, and then I estimate this regression coefficient just as using true scores. this is typical example, and I have some question behind this before I try to model it. I have a question, and I expect that child who uses task avoidance when doing math exercises has weaker level in math. Now the symbols. Because the complexity of models using structural evaluation modeling increase all the time, also the figures how to describe the model develop all the time. And there are some basic rules that I show you, and in the books there is one chapter discussing about how to describe your model. And for example, circle and ellipses are used as latent factors, and now the latent factors usually they are continuous, but now we use it also for categorical latent factor. And categorical latent factor means that we want to see if our data has latent subgroups, and we describe the latent subgroups using circle or ellipses. Then we use boxes or rectangle to show observed variables in the model, and those observed variables could be continuous, manifest variable, they could be item of scale, they could be also categorical or dichotomous variable. We are able nowadays model also categorical variables using them. And now one-headed arrow here means direct effect. It combines latent factors or observed variable, and it also tells that we regress y on x. This means also regression between two variables or two latent factors. It is used for factor loadings. And when we regress some item to latent factors, we use direct effect. One-headed arrow. Then there is two-headed arrows, and it means non-directional association. For example, we allow that two latent factors correlate with each other. Also, we use it for covariance and also residual covariance. And in many times you have only covariance tractor in your model. You are only interested to see association between variables and latent factors, but also you can add mean structure to the model, and then we mark the mean or intercept using triangle. And we can estimate mean or intercept of latent factor or observed variables. When you have complex model, you should think what is important to show to reader. If you have, for example, 30 variables, you use intercepts, you model or associations. There could be that you cannot show all the association. You can then or maybe use only latent factor structure, which is the interesting thing, and so in other figure, for example, measurement structure. Okay. In this figure, I have path model, and now the question was, what is path? The path is, for example, path from math 1 via math 2 to math 3. are in this example task avoidance 1 to math 2, math 3. This is direct effect, and this part from math 1 to math 3 is indirect effect. I, for example, want to ask using this model how large is rank order stability in math or anxiety. I'm interested to see how stable the situation between individuals are from several measurements. I also could ask, could task avoidance predict changes in math? And I'm interested to estimate cross-legged effect. This is cross-legged effect with lag 1, but I'm also could be interested estimate longer lag effect. For example, lag 2, the path from task avoidance to math 3. I'm checking if I remember all the things I want to say to you. Okay, in this model, I, for example, use sum score, but I know that the reliability is not 1. There is measurement error in math score, also is task avoidance sum score. Even there are a lot of items, the reliability could increase to, for example, 0.80. Which is some cutoff value that you can use those variables in your research. But I want to warn you again, if observed variables have measurement error, the estimated stability is smaller than true stability. So the path from task avoidance via math 1 is lower than the true case is, and therefore it could be that we get some sign to spurious effect. But if I'm able to isolate the measurement error, then it is possible that I get unbiased estimates if my model is right. It could be also that there is some factors that do that associations. We come to that situation or those concept causality. And even if I made one-headed error, we cannot say that this is causal effect. You must theoretically think very carefully what is your thinking, what is the independent variable with what is dependent variable. It is not test the hypothesis of causality, even if I estimated it. Okay. Also, this I have show you longitudinal path model, but it is possible to do also using not longitudinal, but what is the word? Cross-sectional. Okay. And now I show you some useful model. It is called in Liffel simplex model. And it means that we are observed variables, measured it several times, and we want to isolate measurement error. And using that kind of structure, we are able to isolate it. And now I have put one-headed error with successive measurement, F1 to F2, F2 to F3, F3 to F4, and so on. And now, estimating these parts, the model produces covariance structure between all the variables. For example, this model says that math 1 and MAT3 correlate with each other because they are connected via F2. F1 is connected to F4 and F5. And this tractor, this estimates, path estimates or regression coefficients tells how much they correlate. Now the estimation produce such kind of coefficients that this theoretical model produce covariance tractor, which is as equal as observed covariance matrix. And sampling makes it so that even we have a right model, this model is right, and I estimate it. When I sample the data, the structure behaves differently. There could be that there is error covariances, which I must add that I get good model fit. And that, if I think that I take many samples, I get different regression coefficient, and then the model do not exactly fit to the data. The produced covariance matrix is not exactly same as observed covariance matrix. There are little differences, and that we must somehow then evaluate. And I talk it later. When you choose such kind of model, simplex model, it's also is called Markov model. And I have such a theoretical thing that I think that growth in math skill is cumulative. And I think that, for example, if we look at that point, there is two individuals with historically co-different trajectory. Green goes here. But in this time, fourth time, their math skill are equal. And now, doing that kind of model, simplex model, I suppose that those two people who have some point, some skill value at fourth measurement, their prediction to last fifth measurement is equal. It also says that I forget history. This history has no meaning in this model. All what has happened in the third measurement, they have no effect to prediction. I get some regression coefficient, and it's not dependent on history. And now when you choose a model, you think theoretically, what you think, what happened in math skill development, how the child learn math. Okay. I continue asking that could this is task avoidance top one and as is measured also six times, anxiety is measured six times, math skill score is measured six times. And now I know that anxiety is related to math score, and further I think what happened? Why anxiety is so heavily, strongly associated to math score. And I think that task avoidance mediates the association between anxiety and math. And I have now add only those mediator arrows, also stability arrows, and then in the first measurement I have allowed them to correlate with each other. But in later in the model, there is no residual correlation. I suppose that all the association between variables are due to this kind of model, mediator model. And I can test this model against the measurement model. If I'm able to produce good fit, this model produces covariance structure, which is near to observed covariance structure, then I'm happy to show you that this model works well. Also, I go to see if this regression coefficient are statistically significant. And those who have familiar with mediator model know that it's not enough to show that this and this are statistically significant. You must multiply the regression coefficient and calculate standard error for that, and so that this indirect effect is statistically significant. In this case, I have only shown you factor structure, and for example, this could be simplex structure. There is only one variable behind this factor, or it could be that there are items behind this factor. Both structure are possible in this model. When we use that kind of model, I, for example, could try to another model. I put some second order factor behind this anxiety, tap and mat, and try to explain those associations using latent second order factor. It could be that if I add second order factor and allow them to explain successive measurements, I'm able to forget these associations. And now I'm talking about situation that when you model, do model, you must theoretically think it. It's very reasonable, but there are alternative models that could fit the data equally well. Then I talk about equivalent models. For example, if you think that you have three observed variables, you know that you can explain all the covariances or correlations allowing two-headed arrow between all the variables, or you can use one-headed arrow between them, adding all possible one-headed arrow, you get similar model, equally well-fitted model. I talk about simplex structure. Now I show you latent growth model, and there are some individuals behind that model, described trajectories, and now I have simulated this data. This is not real, this is simulated so that there is only true scores, and I'm able to show trajectories that is based in true scores. And I have put in this figure only one shape. You see that all the individuals have a similar shape. It is not linear, it's unlinear, but there is some kind of second order polynomial curve. And I ask if in real life we have a measurement error here and the trajectories are not so exactly. And I ask, is the development in MAT skill possible to predict with the shape of forecroft? I estimate the shape and allow those shape magnitude varies between individuals. For example, now, if I put this model, you see that I add one level factor, and when the regression coefficient factor loadings are set equal to 1, it means that when the individual score in level varies, it has a similar effect for all the MAAT variables. If the score is 1, I get, using this regression coefficient, prediction 1, 1, 1, 1. If it is minus 1, I get minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus. It's a level. And now I estimate the slope, and now I have fixed to reference points the first measurement. I fixed this regression coefficient to 0. Then the slope score has no effect to MAAT 1. What is then made a variation between individuals is level. So this means that this is initial level, the level when we start to measure MAAT. And then I have fixed second factor loadings to 1. It works now a reference. The change from first to second measurement is 1. And if there is score 1 in slope, it means that there are differences between MAAT 1 and MAAT 2, 1. And now there is lambda 1 and lambda 2, meaning that I want to estimate these factor loadings. And for example, if I get that 0 to 1 means that kind of increase in MAAT, then there happens something like this. I suppose that this is 1.1, 1.2. There is a little bit stronger increase from 0 to from first to third measurement than first to two measurement. But now the interpretation is very different than using simplex model. In there you forget the history, but now you can see that history is all the time in each individual's trajectory. You have now individual has initial level score, individual slope score, and those two tells what happened in time. For example, if people who has score 1 and 1, one score in level, one value of slope, then in time 1, this model predicts that MAAT score is 1, 2, and depending on this, for example, if it is 1.1, is 2.1, if this is 1.2, the expected value is 1 plus 2.2. And now, even if the true is that kind of trajectories, the shape is similar for all individuals, and there is only magnitude differences, then if there is residual error, which is uncorrelated between measurement time, then I'm able to estimate those measurement error. And this is true score. This model is for true scores. Okay, I have shown you three models, and these are only view models I have shown you. And now I show you some basic analyzes which four structural equation modeling is developed for. We talk about confirmatory factor analysis, and when we start to develop some scale, we for example ask in survey questions, and we think that with those questions we are able to measure some dimension, some latent factors. And when we develop scale, the first thing is we use exploratory factor analysis. We try to find which of the items behave well, measuring only those things what I want to measure. There could be some questions that load, for example, two latent factors, and I'm not interested on that kind of items. That's the one step, developing scale. When I have found some theoretically interested items, I can sample the data, use measurements, those scales, those items I have sourced, and then I put the data to confirmatory factor analysis. And now I'm able to theoretically say that those items measure that latent factor. And the theoretical structure tells you which of the variables load onto which factor. And we hope that each variable load only one factor. And we could be that there is, for example, three latent factors and items, and I allow them to correlate latent factors, and then I estimate it. And I hope that my scale behave well. I have observed covariance matrix between items, and now the confirmatory factor analysis produce some covariance matrix, and I want that they are very near to each other to say that the difference are due to sampling. And with confirmatory factor analysis, we test theoretical structure of our construct. Okay. When using confirmatory factor analysis, the aim could be very different. For example, the aim could be that we have theoretically developed factor structure, and we want to know if the measurement behaves similarly, for example, girls and boys. We have two independent groups, and we want to compare if our scale behaves well. And there are three possibilities to show that measurement behave invariant between girls and boys. The first thing is that we test equality of factor loadings. If we are able to show that equality holds, then we can test that equality intercept of observed variables holds. And also the third related to measurement is that we test equality of residual variances of observed variables, that the invariance holds. Somebody has said that we are able to compare girls and boys using factor analysis. All this equality should hold. But I have think that it is not possible to get such kind of question that there are no other variances than just that latent factor variances and measurement error. There are always such variances which is real, no measurement error, but is not related to latent factor. So I think that this equality of factor loadings, this must hold. If this not hold, you cannot say that you measure the same thing using those questions. When you can show that factor loadings are equal between girls and boys, then you can think that you really measure the same thing with this factor. When you can show the equality of factor loadings, you can compare, for example, latent factor variances between girls and boys. Also, if you have structure, for example, regression coefficients between latent factors, you are able to compare this between girls and boys, only showing that equality of factor loadings holds. If you want to compare means of latent factors, then you should also test that intercepts of observed variables holds, are equal between girls and boys. In that case, this both equality constraint should be held. Equality of factor loads, equality of intercepts. Residual variances. You can test it, but I think that it's not so important when you estimate the model. For example, it could be that some question have, for example, some effect for boys. The boys think something and they answer more, they answer variate more than girls, and then the residual variance maybe do not hold. The equality of residual variance do not hold. But testing these three cases, we talk about factorial invariance. And in such cases, you are not able to show, for example, that all the factor loadings are equal, but you have many items. For example, you have 7 items, and one behave so that you cannot set it equal between girls and boys. We talk then about partial invariance. And I think that at least 3 of items should be equal, that you can say that you measure the same thing. If there is only 2 latent factors loadings that you can put equal, then there are possibilities that you do not measure the same thing, because the other parts in the model can change and explain the differences in factor loadings. At minimum, 3 factor loadings should be equal. Yeah.
Could you use these latent variables in a latent probe model instead of the when you have the variables MAT1, MAT2, MAT3? Could you have a combination of some variables into a latent variable, and then you would kind of know them if you go?
Yeah, if I.
So could you have there?
If you put here latent factors.
Yeah.
Then you are able to show if you have residual variances, and these residual variances is then true differences of growth. In this model, you cannot see if the growth model exactly fit to the true score covariance tract. But using latent factor here, you are able to isolate the measurement error and residual variance. And now the residual variance tells you that you are maybe near, but not exactly. Explain all the covariance structure in this model. That you mean?
Yeah.
Is this answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. One aim, for example, is to use invariant structure between girls and boys. Similarly, if you measure latent factor structure in time, for example, 3 times, you should show that the invariance holds also across time. One aim using confirmatory factor analysis is maybe show validity of latent construct. We are interested to isolate measurement error. We talk about reliability, but now we talk about validity. Even if we can show that the factor structure fits, produce covariance matrix which fits well to observed covariance structure, we are not yet prove that our latent construct is valid. When we talk about construct validity, it means that it's over our validity of test structure. And we can ask how well factor model measures the theoretical construct that we have designed to measure. This is, I think, theoretical reasoning. We have not direct measure for that, but we can, for example, ask how well the measurement covers the theoretical construct. Is there some questions that I can produce which relates to theoretical things? And if I have any, I have asked all the important things, then I could say that content validity is high. I have measured all the things related to latent structure. If I model data using, for example, 3 factors, I try to show that correlation between those 3 factors are small. If the correlation is high, it means that they overlap with each other, and then I say that discriminant validity is poor. If the discriminant validity is poor, the interpretation is very difficult, very demanding. There is a way to help interpretation, for example, using hierarchical linear modeling, using Kolesky decomposition, to show what of the correlated latent factors are related individually of those outcome variables. But if the correlation is high, it makes your difficulties. We can have, for example, scale or factor structure, which is used many times and proved to be valid, behave well. And we want to, for example, it's very long, we want to shorten that measure, that structure, and we compare this to long form and shortened scale. And if we found that association is very high, we say that criterion validity is high. We are able to shorten the scale, losing anything important. There are also many questions you can ask related to validity. And when you think that you want to ask something related to your construct, then take a right concept. There are, for example, concurrent validity, predictive validity, convergent validity, and so on. In for example, different area of science, they use different concept, even they are very, very similar in their interpretation. Yeah.
How is predictive validity different from nomological validity?
Predictive validity and
nomological validity. That is, nomological validity is recommended to be tested when we are developing skills to test the constructs nomological validity, whether it belongs to the nomological network, whether it predicts the outcomes that it's supposed to predict.
I have not heard. Yeah. Who wants to say something?
Well, I think it sounds like material validity. It might be that different names are the same.
I think it's dependent on which. For example, if you are in science of psychology or in science of education or in science of sports, you use different terms. Check what terms you must to use if you want to compare, for example, discriminant validity. I think discriminant validity is very well to understand, but there are many, many validity concepts that are not so clear. Okay, then I talk about when you build part models using latent factors. I think then there is two stages. In first stages, you build the measurement model. And in measurement model, you allow that latent factors correlate with each other. When you do that, all the misfits between model and measurements, observations are due to measurement model. You see what is the magnitude of misfit related to measurement model. And after that, if you are not happy of the fit and modify it, you add some residual covariances, for example, between items, you get a fit that you can accept, or misfit you can accept, and then you go to model structure. Now instead that all the latent factors are allowed to correlate, you put the, for example, directed arrow from one factor to other factor, build the model using your theoretical thinking. And then estimate the model again. And now you get some fit indices. The model misfit increase compared to measurement structure. And now there are some recommendations that do not only use this fit, which consists theoretical model, but you use chi-square difference test comparing this measurement model and theoretical model. Then you are able to show or see or tell what part of misfit is related to measurement model and which is due to theoretical model. And this is important, this theoretical model misfit, how much of the total misfit is related to theoretical model. And also you get statistical test if the misfit is large enough, do not do the sampling. Okay, now we talk about missing values in data. There are three concepts I tell you. There is missing completely at random, we use that kind of mcar. And then there is missing at random, and we use mar assigned to missing at random. And then there is possibility that missing is not random. In the best case, if our data is so that missingness is completely at random, it means that missing value of, for example, y variable is not related to any observed or unobserved data. There is no information that can predict that missing value. It's totally random. And now, in that case, if we use, for example, that kind of method that uses listwise deletion or pairwise deletion, we drop out some data doing missing values, we get unbiased results because the missing is completely at random. But the problem is that our statistical power to detect some effects decrease. Also, that means that confidence intervals makes larger. It's not recommended. When we use structural equation modeling, we can use full information maximum likelihood, for example, or other method, we get all the information we have in data to estimate our path coefficient or regression coefficient. And we can use full information maximum likelihood in the case of missing completely at random, but they do not need so stringent definition. It only needs missing at random. And now it means that, for example, if I have missing values in y variable, this is my outcome variable, and there are x1, x2 to xk variables which are independent of value y. They are related to missing values. Now the missing value is not completely at random, but we try to prove that it is missing at random. Now if there are variables that are related to missing values, it's actually non-random missingness. But if we put these x variables in the same model than y variable and allow them to correlate to y variable, we get a situation missing at random. So you should, in your data, make a dummy-coded variable that tells the missing values and associate, for example, correlate all other variables to the missing values variable. And if you find some correlation, then you know that in that variable predicts missingness, and you should move that variable into your model and allow them to correlate to y variable. Then you are able to say that in your model missing is at random. It could be that outside your data are variables that could predict missing values. We have no any way to prove that case. Only we can think what has happened. If you have long history to make research in some area, then you maybe have some knowledge how to interpret the data having missing values, how it is biased, how your results is biased. Same case is if you have non-random missingness. There are possibilities somehow predict the effect of missingness, but I think it's a few cases in our university. Maybe the Center of Statistics do something kind, something like that, but I don't know. Have you some comments?
Well, the only issue is that I would like to point out that in a very general case, when you're doing the analyzing, and you find out that, what is the case with the missing cases. So in that case, very rarely you nowadays find out that and test it, is it true or not, but you just use the list-wise method and the pairwise deletion methods. And you were pointing out about the size of the confidence limit, but I would like to point out that it also makes your data weaker because you lose cases.
Mm-hmm.
As simple as that.
Yeah.
It makes the same effect as you were talking about.
Yeah.
But the severe issue is that you are losing cases, and you don't want to lose any cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
What is the contingent data that you can do computation? For example, is there in statistics, is there like, so if there are 200 cases out of which 40 cases are missing data, can I do imputation? Because in this case, it's almost like 20% of the data.
Well, the practical limit of when to start considering the missing cases is about, it varies from, say, from 5% to 3%.
5 to 3%.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it's more than that, then you're different than before.
Yeah.
And you should do something like that.
Yeah. Good. Maybe Jari keep some course modeling missing data in next order. Maybe. I'm not sure yet. Okay. Now I show you steps building structural equation model. There are 5 steps, and the building starts model specification, and it relates your theory into practice. Then you make sure that you are able to estimate the model. Your model should be identified. All the parameters should be estimated in a one way. Then you choose estimation method related if you have continuous variables, if you have normally distributed variables, you choose appropriate estimation method, and then you estimate the model. After that, you are able to evaluate the model fit, which tell how well you are, how successful you are building the model. And after that, we look the model carefully, doing diagnostics. We check all the parameters that they are statistically significant, and then we look if we have missing parameter. The many programs produce, for example, modification indices, which tell how the fit changes if we add some parameter in the model. In the case you want to drop some parameters in the model or add some parameters your model, you re-specify your model and do the process again. When you model, start to model specification, you have collect all the theory you have or you can relate to the model, and there are some cases that they are fully theory-driven model, for example, confirmatory factor analysis, and somebody many years ago say that you only can use SEM for fully theory-driven model and reject or accept the model depending on the fit value. And my experience is that okay, we can test the fully theory-driven model, but in same time, in same article, we develop the method or method to measure something, and we maybe modify a little bit and are able to show that doing those little modification, we accept the model fit. We achieve model fit, which is acceptable. Many of the models, okay, there are many theories, many hypotheses. We test doing one complex model. We use partly theory-driven model. There could be that there appear some parts we cannot theoretically set in our model. Those parts are explorative in nature. When you made some theoretical model, you could be alternative hypotheses, alternative models, and also I have talked about equivalence of models. Be aware of that. You can put the same construct in different way, you get exactly same fit, then we talk about equivalent models. And in Rick Hoyle's book, they talk nowadays fully explorative models, and they talk about model generation. In this level, for example, there is such kind of, I have not used it in several years, but that years I use it, there is such kind of automatically that it add all the parameters using large set modification indices to the model, automatically go further. And that kind of automatical model developing feature is coming in many of the programs, different kind of. And then we talk about model generation. But when you think that model generation, it means that if you truly do model generation and they are totally explorative models, then you have to fit all the possible models in the data. All the part model, all the two-headed arrow model and so on. But I think when you choose the model, there are equivalent models. They tell the same story all, but the interpretation is very different. You choose the best fitting models and then try to generate model that is that you can generalize to the population and tell what it theoretically means. Model identification is very difficult to calculate. And I think that the one way to tell you model identification, I say that model is identified if there is only one best solution to solve parameter estimates. If there is only one best solution, then the model is identified. If there are two solutions, the model is not identified. But in case you have wrongly or misspecified model so that model is truly non-identified, the program cannot calculate it. It makes an error message. And you can suspect your model if program gives warning that maybe the model is not identified. But the program does not know if there is truly the case of non-identification. So if you go to estimate the model, start from simple model and go step by step adding variables or factors in the model, so you be sure that your model is identified. For example, if you have two factors, make a one factor model, you get estimates, make one factor model estimates, you know that they are identified. So when adding one arrow between variables, they must be identified. You have only use one arrow, and then you can, if the model fail to estimate, you should try to, for example, add starting values or fix some values to some known value in the simpler model and so on to achieve the estimates. But the model identification is very difficult to calculate. In simple case, we can show the identification, but when the model has many indicator, many latent factors, the calculation is very difficult. Then, estimation. I have said that maximum likelihood is good choice in many cases. And because they have developed full information maximum likelihood, which suppose that missing data are missing at random, and if the distribution of continuous variables are non-normal, there are robust versions to use, for example, maximum likelihood. That is, the maximum likelihood estimates behave well, but using maximum likelihood method, the standard error are biased, and therefore the correction are due to standard errors in many robust versions. But there are other possibilities, and it depends what program you use. For example, I'm not sure if EQS is or AMOS. I think AMOS uses that kind of asymptotically distribution-free method, which is developed for non-normal variables case. But there are other estimation methods, for example, Wiegand least square method, but this method needs many times larger sample size than maximum likelihood, because this weights the estimates using higher moment covariance theory. There are simulation studies, for example, the FIML maximum likelihood needs, for example, 200 cases. But if we use Wiegand least square, for example, we have Likert scale, then we need, for example, 1,000 individuals in our sample. Then evaluation of model fit. When we have estimated the model produce covariance structure, mean structure, and we compare mean structure, covariance structure to observed covariance structure and mean structure. And the difference between these two produce these fit indices. Chi-square test is used at the first fit indices. If we get non-significant value, we are able to say that we have model that fits well to the data. We not need in that case any other fit indices. But unfortunately, this chi-square test behave very sensitive when you have larger sample or if your model is complex, chi-square test value give you p-value lower than 0.05. Then you say that your model fit not well to the data, but we ask if the misfit is small enough to accept that we have achieved good fitting model. So we use other fit indices, and there are recommendations to use several fit indices. For example, there are many fit indices. These are picked from M+. It uses comparative fit index, Tucker-Lewis index, which I think are most common fit indices. Also root mean square error of approximation after many programs. And those values, cutoff values for good fitting model is shown here. And they are picked up from the article Hu and Pentler 1999. if I achieve comparative fit index to leverage index greater 0.95, root mean square error of approximation lower than 0.06, and standardized root mean square ratio lower than 0.08, I'm very happy. I have achieved good fitting model. But in Hu and Bentler, this cutoff values are, I think, when you use only that fit indices. When you combine those, I use always four fit indices. There could be that someone of the fit indices so that it's not appropriate. In many cases, when the chi-square is very sensitive, it's based on comparative fit index and Tucker-Lewis index, also this index, so poor fit. So root mean square so and standardized root mean square so me that I have achieved good fitting model and I accept it because I know that this is these are related to chi-square value. Yeah.
I have a question. One of the papers that you give for reading, all the RMCA values were above 0.1. Or even 0.2. This paper,
Mark Kikanda's
paper. So there was no.
What is the cutoff value?
RMCA was 0.1,
0.24.
It's like everything is above 0.1.
For which?
Sorry?
For which fit indices?
Yeah, fit indices, yeah.
But root mean square.
Was above 0.1 for everything. For all the models.
We see tomorrow that article.
Yeah, I just don't know whether the viewers...
There are some other cutoff values depending on who says. For example, there are such kind of values than 0.9, but these are coming from Hu and Bentler, which is many times referred article. Okay.
Complex, the chi-square value can be significant.
Yeah.
You have some references. Okay, I would like. Yeah.
This is well-known fact.
Okay.
I can show you some article.
Sorry, I have a question for that. Is it about the complexity of the model? I have seen many times it's about normality or the big sample.
Yeah. The complexity of model is not known. I know because I have simulated the data, and when the complexity of model increase, then the chi-square value is sensitive. In many times when the it depends that you have enough data to estimate all the parameters in the models, and it shows in chi-square value.
But I've seen in many journals and reporting the results, it has been kind of silly nowadays. People are reporting the chi-square values, but every time is significant, so they don't want to have it, and usually they don't even put the p-value anymore in it.
There are some history.
Then they are saying that, okay, it's sensitive, but in the case is that they have sample size is about 200, which is perfectly good for the, it's not sensitive, and it's not normal, and they are saying, okay, it's sensitive, we don't interpret this. And that's the best of what you got in this.
I have not yet saw any research that tell that the complexity of model is related to sensitivity.
Yeah.
But I know it now. Do you know, Jari, many times when we do some complex model, it gives p-value lower than 0.05, but the other fit indices, for example, root mean square error of approximation and standardized root mean square so good fitting.
But I agree with you that this what you saw shown us here is the standard way of doing it. Rather many times we are doing that.
Yeah. Okay, but there is also way to look standardized residuals. You show what really is the fact in your model.
Yeah.
and then you can maybe tell the reader that even the chi-square value is significant, there is any more differences in observed and model-produced covariance matrices. Unknowing diagnostic tests, and this I have tell you already, parameter estimates, is there statistically significant, and looking modification indices if we need additional parameter. All the time you modify your model, it's not strictly theoretically formed. It's now explorative in nature. And there is no research what's happened if we modify data. The fit indices is developed for theoretical model. When we test theoretical model, always you can modify your model to get fit indices showing good fit. But there is no any way to evaluate which is the best way to do, which are the critical way to do that modification. Now I have time, 7 minutes. Now we talk about interpretation and reporting results. When you report your results, you interpret your results somehow. And graphs are often used to show sim results, and you must, when you choose graph, you should use, if you use raw estimates or standardized estimates. And it depends which is the best way to look the data, look the results. When you use standardized solution, which I recommend in many times, it's still in same time effect size. Standardized regression coefficients tells the effect size. When you use raw coefficient, you need put also the standard error to see if they are statistically significant. But then you must add, for example, R square to tell what is the effect size. This is one example. I have used, in this article, it is used standardized estimates. It means that I see the magnitude of effects. I see that this well-being factor, loadings are very high. 0.8 times 0.8 tells how much variance this well-being factor explains from depressive symptoms. But in this part, I cannot use that 0.33 times 0.33. It's not tell what is the actual association between negative emotional and psychological emotion control in the meaning of explanation ratio, because it could be that correlate with other independent variables, and other independent variables are also associated to psychological control. So in this case, if there are large correlation between independent variables, I recommend you show them, and then if they are high, this not tell the every or whole story. You can then do something for this tract. This is typical way to show results. And then there is some general guide to reporting SEM analysis. And I have picked up some paper, Anne Boonsma, 2000, reporting analysis of covariance structure, structural equation modeling. I think this is very specific paper. It depends on your journal what they asked you to show. Some reviewers say, I don't know what is the journal, say that drop the fit indices from the paper. Yeah, they are not needed. But there are some requirements. Some requirements they make important that fit in this is showing. And if you think that you critically can read the paper, think what you put in the paper. Other is Hoyle and Panther in book Hoyle Eric, Structural Equation Modeling, Concept Issues and Applications. There is some guide for reporting data. And I have copied McDonald's paper, Principles and Practice in Reporting Structural Equation Analysis. And in abstract, I have copied, for example, they say non-normative and missing data problems should also be addressed and that kind of information. But now I have three slides which I think is important. You have research aim, and this aim changes your theoretical model. And when you theory says what is the theoretical model, you should know theoretical concept and maybe diagram to show what is the theoretical structure you want to test. And if you have competitive models, alternative models, also show them. And use names for latent factors, items, variables, and parts. Then you should describe the data to be able to know what is the sample size, what is the sample, what is the population from which the sample is get, how large is the missing value proportion, and how to handle it in modeling. If there are skewed variables, the one way is to normalize them, for example, using logarithmic transformation, and you should tell that information. In the analysis strategy or statistical model label, after that you tell model building and estimation. And describe model building step by step. There should be estimation method, how the model fit is evaluated, how the models are compared, how the model is modified, and tell the statistical program and its version number you have used. And when you present results step by step, think what steps are necessary to report. Writing results, you show the results and fit indices, for example, using graphs. You write model comparison results. And if the model is modified, you show the final model test results and fit indices. And then, if you use raw data, use parameter estimates and standard errors. You can also use parameter estimates and standard errors also in standardized case. And remember that complex model can be presented splitting model to several figures to make very clear. And when you use raw estimate or standardized, tell them which of them you use. And if you have used equivalent models, then you present them, but consider to present equivalent model results also. And many times the reviewers ask statistical power, which describes the replicability. If somebody else do with some sample size similar model, what is the power to get similar results? It could be that you calculate there is more important parameter you want to show that their power is high, or it could be that you test hold a model and then you test if the chi-square test in how many cases is reject the model. If you have large data, think, use cross-validation technique. You divide your data two random part and mate model and modify model using one part and then test this theoretical model in other part. This is like you do two-step analysis, collect the data two times. In first step you develop the model and then the other step you test the model. I have warning that in most SEM model, if there are longitudinal data, causality cannot prove. And for example, Hoyle's book, they recommend terms direct effect, indirect effect, total effect, such term. And tell the limitation, sample size, skewness, etc. And also strengths, your paper. There are, sorry, I am late, but I show you some possibilities to model the data further. Nowadays, the programs are developed that you can use structural equation modeling technique in multi-level model. For example, you have school data, you measure the child stress, and it could be that in class there are individuals, but there are some factors that increase the child stress in class. And in the other class, the child stress in average is smaller. There are variation between classes. Also, there is variation between schools, and that you are able to get unbiased results, you must use multi-level modeling technique. This time, this is three-level data. And you can, for example, add covariates to predict child stress in all these cases. For example, there could be factor in schools that explain part of variance in child stress. There could be, for example, gender in individual level, class size in class level that predicts child stress, and there could be, for example, school district, urban, rural, that explain child stress. And we are able to model that using multi-level model and using structural equation model, for example, latent factors. This is one example. There is only individual measurements, but now you saw that there are also between level variation, which means department levels. And there, they explain in this article that this is somehow shared. Well-being, for example, in some department individuals well-being is high, some department low, and there is variation. And this multi-level model tests if there are truly between-level variations, between work department variation. We are able to do that kind of model. Then we use that regression coefficient between person. We think that this is random regression coefficient. It depends, it varies from family to family. And this data is measured 7 days, and there are successive days. And we think that father's emotion transmits to child's emotion in next day. And we think that this regression coefficient varies, And one explanation for this is Salt's negative emotionality. It's a cross-level interaction between Salt and father's emotion. This is one way doing analysis, one possible model. And when you do that kind of model, it's very difficult to say what happening if you only show regression coefficients and some parameter values. So to see what it means, use, for example, figures to show that when the child's temperament is high, the father's negative emotions transfer to child's negative emotions, but know if the child's temperament is low. Then we can add SEM and mixture model. In mixture model we try to find latent subgroups in our sample, and nowadays the mixture modeling is possible to use also in SEM context. And any parameters, mean values, intercepts, variances, regression coefficient can differ in this modeling. Even what you can think, we can model it, if we have enough data. Of course, this increases the demanding of sample size. That is one model with factor mixer model. There are X-Hausten and Vigor measured two times, and we find subgroups of those individuals having X-Hausten and Vigor in different level. And we find four groups we explained using figures. There are subgroups, those change. There are two groups, those do not change in Vigor or Exhaustion, but some groups whose Exhaustion decrease and Vigor increase and different way. And more complex, we can combine structural equation modeling, multi-level modeling and mixture modeling. And now I say, start with simple model to complex model. If you directly go to complex model, I don't think it's successful way. And this is for one example of that. This is the same model, but now we think that this regression coefficient is not varied with family, it varies between days. And now we explain that there are some profiles, there is some days that it's strong effect, some days this effect disappear, there is no effect. And now we also explain that with child's negative emotion, how much it could explain daily variation. But there are many, many possibilities, and if you have some idea, try to find the correspondent statistical model to answer your research question. Now I'm finished. Thank you.